This is Taco Incidents, where we learn the secrets of breakthrough brand experience from the most brilliant leaders while we're on the search for the perfect taco. I'm Scott Porter, entrepreneur, brand experience strategist, and I'm completely obsessed with tacos. Thanks so much for joining us. I met up with Davis Smith at Taqueria 27 in Holiday, Utah. In only 5 years, his outdoor clothing company, Cotopaxi, is rivaling legacy competitors with immersive experiences and purpose-driven strategies to do good that are deeply embedded into its brand DNA. I wanted to learn why he believes in the power of brand experience, what he does to create it, and how it's helped him thrive. All over tacos. It really doesn't get much better than this.
Our specials today?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's do it.
Okay. Guacamole has watermelon, poblano, lime, and feta. Super good.
I've had this before.
Oh, so good.
What? it's absolutely amazing.
Okay. That's easy. Let's do that.
Classic.
So the Al Pastor,
we'll share.
Yeah.
I know I came here once and there was a duck taco. Yes. And I want to say it had corn or squash in it or something.
Corn, squash, sweet potato.
Okay.
Yes.
To die for.
Super unique.
Yep. You know what? Yeah. I'm going to admit I've never had a duck taco. I've had duck before, but never a duck taco.
First and best.
Well, okay. There we go. You know, I mean,
it's kind of like a breakfast.
Also,
taco,
I don't normally do chorizo for dinner, but breakfast, I normally get huevos con chorizo, but
yeah.
Let's do it. You have cool
sounds
chorizo.
Awesome.
Okay. Let's do it.
Come on, corn tortillas. Is that going to work with you guys?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Let's do it.
Absolutely.
Okay. Right.
Fantastic.
I will be back.
Okay. Thank you.
By the way, one of the best Al Pastor tacos I ever had was a place you recommended in Mexico.
In where? In Playa?
In Playa.
Playa del Carmen? El Fogón.
Yeah.
So good, man.
Yeah, so I've been there. Actually, I've been there a few times since you recommended it.
Yeah?
The other place I went that you recommended one time was in Mexico City.
Okay.
And it was, I don't remember what it was. Actually, I went to a few places you recommended there.
Okay,
maybe three different taco places. There was one that did this, I'm forgetting what it was called, but it was a crispy cheese. They kind of folds over and it's hard.
Yeah, it's the best thing in the planet.
Oh my gosh.
La Costra. It's called a costra, and then you get whatever meat you want with it.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Costra is the crust or the cheese.
Yeah.
So they crisp the cheese. El Califa.
El Califa.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that might have been it. Yeah. So.
So good, man. And it's it's got the smoky salsa and it's the perfect flour tortilla. I think right now that's what I want to, at this moment, that's what I want to be. Oh, wow.
Sweet.
My last meal on the planet. Okay.
Okay, and then these are house-made hot sauces.
Okay.
And how do you recommend? Do you just put it on?
I just kind of like it on my tacos.
They
go with different tacos.
Okay.
So this is good on the fish. This is smoky. It's good on the duck. Way good on the
duck. Oh, on the duck.
And then the orange is habanero. So just whatever you want spicy.
On the chorizo maybe or something.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
So, enjoy.
Cool. Awesome. Thank you.
We need to go together.
We do.
We need to go together because I don't know if you've wandered around Latin America with another bald white guy, but I have a cousin who you know, McKay Thomas, and we look very similar, like you and I do. And dude, it's just everyone just stops and smiles. Gemelos, they're like twins. So actually, maybe the three of us should go together.
We should go. There'd be triates, man.
Yeah.
They'd be like, who are these? This is like freak of nature. Why don't these guys have hair on their heads? And they're so white.
So have you had this before? Watermelon?
So is there watermelon
watermelon
the top or is it inside?
No, it's inside it. It's hard to actually find it, but you'll know. I mean, it's it's a sweetness to it. It's kind of unique.
I mean, everything about this, everything inside here, this is amazing.
Yeah, this is outstanding.
Yeah, the three amigos. That'd be hilarious, dude. We should do that and just cruise Mexico City and have a camera on other people's reactions. And then when we all start speaking Spanish.
Yeah. Last year we went and we did a survival trip. You know, I do these survival trips.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
And so this group was hey, we want to go do one of those. So we went and spent 5 days sailing from island to island, brought no food. So it was just what we could spear and, eating coconuts with our machete and like conch, and you know, it was absolutely fantastic. You know, it's amazing how good the food is when you're starving.
Mm. And, oh yeah.
And when you've hunted it yourself.
Huh.
There's something really cool about, man, you're just like alive inside as you like you spear fish, and it's like
you got this. Yeah. This was you found this.
Yeah.
You know, hunted you
know, it. The interesting thing is, so the first one of the guys on the trip is my cousin McKay.
Yeah.
We'd done a survival trip before, so he knew how to spear fish. We'd done this before. Everyone else in the group had never done it, the other five. So the first day, dude, it was sparse. We like speared two fish, me and one of the
and
other
how many? There's
fish,
seven of you?
Seven of us. It was not enough to eat, so we're like, hey, you know what? It's not even worth the effort to prepare this. Let's save them. The first day we had a little cooler, like a styrofoam cooler with some ice in it. So we just threw them in the ice and we thought, you know, it'll melt, but tomorrow we can still eat this if we catch another fish.
Yeah.
So then by the next day we're like out hunting fish and we are starving. I mean, everyone's gone like 24 hours. Everyone's
without food.
Yeah, without food. And luckily I speared.
Oh my gosh.
Oh yeah, no problem.
So
what do we
fast.
Got here?
We have the chorizo right here. Mm. I will put the duck in front of you since it's your go-to now.
Wow. Okay. Thank you. Oh my gosh, it smells great.
It does.
We're...
Anyway, I speared the biggest fish I've ever speared in my life, and it was like perfect. It like fed all of us, and we bought all these limes and like some onions and stuff like that when we were in the little town.
Uh-huh.
So we made ceviche, and
Amazing.
It was unreal.
I bet.
It was unreal, the best ceviche I've ever had, and there's something great about just sharing food with people you care about.
Oh yeah.
Sounds special.
Well, it really is. And I think that there's something about eating with your hands too. I don't know if it's like the fact that you're not using any utensils that, I mean, these are kind of weapons, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
that you're just like, hey, pass the limes, and you're like sharing,
yeah.
And there's something, and just
no,
like
true. Yeah.
Breaks down these barriers, and you're not, there's less formality, I think too. So let's dig in, dude. Okay,
yeah.
So that's the duck. With the crispy leeks.
I think you're gonna love this one.
I'm excited. I don't think I've ever really done much duck before. In general, actually. Okay. All right.
Go
you wanna do
it?
Duck first?
I'll
Here,
do duck
let's
first.
Just swap these. Here.
Oh, I'll... yeah. Good idea.
So you guys are, but then, so there's adventures, but you're going to Orizaba.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
You're
so
hiking
I didn't finish. So yeah, we're hiking it's the third highest mountain in North America.
Uh-huh.
So Denali is taller, Mount Logan in Canada is taller, and then this is the third highest. And so Pico de Orizaba is in central Mexico. It's just under 19,000 feet. So a glacier, so you use crampons and you rope in. And
no oxygen,
and
though.
No oxygen, and it's not a super technical climb. You know, this is a new challenge for all of us, and we're pretty excited about it.
And
we're
going to
eat some great
guide?
Food.
Are you taking a
yeah,
guide?
We're going to have a guide, yeah.
And they're cooking for you?
Yeah, they're going to cook for us, and it's going to be fantastic.
So, like, Mexican food for
oh, yeah.
the whole time.
Oh, yeah. Like that's,
so, it's like...
that's what we're most excited about.
Exactly.
You know, forget the mountain. It's like the tacos and stuff.
Dude, that duck is good. Well, I'm so jealous, and I'm so stoked for you guys. Anytime anyone goes to Mexico, I'm just like, oh, man. I hope you eat really well.
Me too.
I think the saddest thing about Mexico City is the physical limitations of your stomach. Because you just want to keep eating.
Mm-hmm.
You just want to keep eating, but you literally, you have to give your body time to process it.
You know, about a year ago, I went with two, with my wife and two of our friends,
mm-hmm.
couple friends from undergrad.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a short trip, 3 or 4 days, kind of a
David,
long
right?
weekend. Yeah, well, yeah,
yeah,
with David Royce.
Mm-hmm.
Our wives were, the three of them were like best friends, and we just ate and ate and ate and ate. And
as you should.
Mexico City is just, it's one of the best food towns of
That's what I'm
in
saying.
The world.
Easy.
And everything from like tacos that cost a few dollars to like.
Or not
a
even.
A whole like amazing.
Pujol.
That's like one of the best restaurants in the world. And you know, I grew up in Latin America, as you
yeah.
know. And moved there when I was 4 years old. Lived there my entire childhood and then moved back as an adult. Lived in Bolivia and Peru. And then Brazil with
mm-hmm.
my wife and kids. And so, yeah, I wanted my kids to make sure they had experiences there. You know, they develop a love for that community and that culture like I did. So
yeah.
it was special.
That's
yeah.
cool.
So,
how's their Spanish?
Oh, man, it's embarrassing. Don't tell them I said that. But
we'll edit this out. We'll edit
yeah.
it out.
yeah, it's hard. The thing is, what I've learned is that the only way to learn a language is to just be completely immersed. Like when we lived in Brazil... Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
When we lived in Brazil, my girls learn the language because they were all their
they
friends
had to.
Spoke. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so they weren't with us all the time. But when we were in Mexico for those 5 weeks, they were with us all the time, which meant they
crutch.
Weren't. They didn't have.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were in crutch. And so, you know, we had someone that would come in and we'd have someone that would come in and cook for us here and there that would help. We had a 1 month old. So we actually had someone come babysit for us here and there.
Nice.
My wife would take the 1 year old, but we'd maybe go out, just the three of us, and leave the other kids. We were trying to give them opportunities to speak the language, but it just didn't work as well as we hoped. So it's kind of a fail.
That's okay. They'll be better for it. No question. I mean, they were in the Yucatan hiking pyramids and swimming in like,
yeah, cenotes
and like,
and my girls got dive certified, which was cool.
No way.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
And I did a survival trip with them.
Yeah, another
girls.
One?
Yeah, I did one with them. Yeah, which is really
did
cool.
You make them eat ceviche? Kill their own ceviche?
So we had lobster.
Okay.
That's what we ended up spearing. So.
That's awesome.
Which one do you want to go for next?
I'm thinking chorizo.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure the al pastor looks really great. So you are super big on like creating experiences for your family, for yourself, for your friends, for like your business. So where did all this like love for just and zest for exploring all that life has to offer, where does that come from? Is that just something you've always had?
So I grew up, like I mentioned, in the developing world, and I didn't come from money. You know, very middle class family, large family, 8 kids in my family. I'm the second of 8. So we couldn't afford expensive vacations, but we were living in these kind of exotic,
amazing places. Yeah.
And so, and my dad is an adventurer. So we made our own raft and we floated the Amazon River fishing for piranha. And, you know, we'd go survive on islands and stuff, making our own spears. So that was my childhood. I grew up, you know, my brother and I, every day after school, we'd go to this jungle right next to our home. And we would swing on vines. It was an idyllic childhood. And,
wow.
But I just learned to love the outdoors. I connected with the people and felt a deep sense of empathy for others, and I knew that I wanted to find a way to help people later on in my life. But the sense of adventure, like, it stuck with me, and so I've always, I mean, that's all I think about, really, is like, when's the next adventure and who can I go on it with? And, you know, I love having people experience some of this stuff for the first time, so it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So, and then, you know, I kind of built that into this business, you know, with Cotopaxi.
Yeah.
So it's something I believe in. So
what, what is, I mean, because you started Cotopaxi going up against like legacy brands, huge years of like almost a century, you know, you talk about some of your competitors and what, like, why not just go at it in a traditional business sort of way, you know, like market, build things out there. Like, what made you decide to kind of go at it the way that you chose? And how has that looked for Cotopaxi?
Yeah. So I'd say, you know, first of all, you know, there was a why with this business before I knew exactly what I would do. I've known my entire life I needed to do something like this that could impact lives. And
something in outdoor retail or
something
with the model?
With the social mission.
Hmm.
And I didn't know how to do it. I mean, to be clear, it was a mentor of mine in undergrad that was an entrepreneur who would become a philanthropist. And he's the one that encouraged me to go become an entrepreneur. And he said, if you become an entrepreneur, then maybe down the line, 10 or 20 years down the line, you'll be able to go find your own way of making an impact. And so that's why I pursued entrepreneurship. And so I started my first business with that goal in mind. And my first two businesses didn't have a social mission. I didn't understand how to connect that mission to the brand or the business in a way that made sense. And
so you're just building up experience, like, this is how you run a business, this is how you grow a business.
This is how you hire great people. This is,
right.
You know, I learned a lot of mistakes along the way. Ultimately, it kind of clicked, and I had this idea of that I could build a business that could inspire people to do good with me, that could move people to do good, and that would inspire people to, where it wasn't just me doing good or me like trying to help people, but it was like a movement. I wasn't sure what that business would be at first, but within 48 hours of having this idea, I knew I would do something in the outdoor space.
Really?
Yeah.
What, how did it just like came to you, inspiration, kind of combining a lot of your passions together, or?
So it was basically, I'd flown back, I was in China for work. I was living in Brazil, but I was in China for work, and I flew back to Brazil. It's a long, it was like 40 hours of travel. So I was like pretty jet lagged, laying in bed, but couldn't sleep. I was just, this was on my mind. I knew
what the next move was gonna be?
Yeah. I felt this drive to go do something more meaningful. You know, I was back in Latin America. We're living in this high rise, surrounded by people with a lot of money. And you look out the window and you see a shanty town right below you.
The favelas,
you drive
past, right?
The favela, yeah, that you drive by every single day. And every day it was a reminder of, I'm really lucky. I didn't do anything to deserve this life. I'm not better or smarter or more deserving or harder working than these other people.
Yeah.
I just got lucky in where I was born. Mm. And I knew that it was time for me. And so I ended up resigning from my role as co-CEO of that last business. And I started, you know, that night as I was laying in bed, I had some ideas start coming to my mind, and I wrote them down on my phone, kind of rolled over and wrote them down, and thought I'd be able to maybe go to sleep and come back to those thoughts in the morning. But more thoughts started coming. I wrote them down again, and then pretty soon I just left. I went out and sat on a couch and in our living room, and I was
in Sao Paulo.
In Sao Paulo, yeah. And for two days and two straight nights, I didn't sleep. Our slogan, Gear for Good, the Questival events.
Really?
The early ideas for the Questival.
Yeah.
The llama and the logo, like everything was the name Cotopaxi, which is the name of a volcano where I grew up in Ecuador. And that it just kind of came to me. I never had an experience like that before. I probably never will again. But I kind of knew what I needed to do. But I wanted to build a brand that was more than just selling outdoor gear. There was purpose built and baked into the very DNA of this business. And also I wanted experiences to be part of that. You know, we launched the first day that we turned on our website, we had the first Questival, this 24-hour adventure race, which was nuts. Yeah.
Yeah, it's nuts. I participated in one in San Francisco.
Oh, that's right. I remember
the
this.
First
that's
one
right.
you did there.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I gotta find out what this is all about. And it was such a riot. Like at some point we jumped into the bay in the water. I was wearing a tuxedo shirt. I don't even remember why. I mean, there were like so many crazy things that we did, and we're like going out to the coast, and anyway, the bridge, San Francisco Bridge, and the Bay Bridge, and it was
an amazing experience.
It was an amazing experience, and you're out there like, why don't you describe Questival? Because I mean, I'd love to hear in your mind, like, or how you maybe conceptualized it and where it's kind of grown from there. Because you've done how many now?
We've probably done 100, probably over 100 Questivals around the country. So the idea, like, everyone, when you do the race, you sign up, you get one of our backpacks. So you're using our product the whole race.
Yeah.
And we have an app that we developed. You sign up on this app, and it gives you hundreds of challenges that you're choosing from. And you go out and complete them. They're everything from giving service in the community to doing stuff in the outdoors to quirky, funny kind of challenges. And people are sharing them on social media. First Questival, we had 30,000 social media posts of people wearing our backpacks, doing these amazing adventures and giving service in the community. So it was just a great way for people to go live the brand values of Cotopaxi.
Yeah.
And then they become evangelists. They've lived the brand. They believe in it. They understand what it stands for.
Yeah.
And so that was pretty awesome.
Totally immersive brand experience.
Yeah. You know, and it was really inspired when I was in grad school. So I went to the Wharton School for an MBA, and I did an MA in international studies there as well. It was a dual degree program. And this part of this program, me and one of my classmates, we came up with an idea of doing this race in Central America from Belize to Panama. And you had to go through all 7 countries. You had to cross every border by foot. You couldn't use a plane. We got 60 of our classmates together, and we formed teams, and we raced for like 11 or 12 days. And it was like exhausting, but it was like the most amazing experience. And, you know, but that was kind of the inspiration for this festival. And so it's been a fun part of the brand.
Who won? That race.
I did.
you did?
I did.
Well, by how much?
I mean, I'm an intense guy.
Competitor. So
I mean, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, all
the
out.
Way. Yeah, so.
So how many people on your team? Was it?
There were 4 of us.
4 people.
Yeah.
And you're like, you guys, we're winning
this.
Oh,
they were. They were
was,
like,
there
they were
on the
like
was there something on the line? Was there something on the line? Just the glory.
Yeah, just the glory. And we barely beat another team, but I think our team and the other team were like, I think, light years ahead of the other team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not everyone took it as serious. The advantage that we had, actually, me and the other 3 guys, we were all members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and we don't drink. So we were the only sober. We had a total advantage because we were sober the whole time. And so that's really why we won. It had nothing to do with us being faster or better.
And the language probably helped.
The language helped. A few of us spoke Spanish.
Yeah.
So actually, I guess I was the only one that spoke Spanish.
You were?
Yeah. There was a Japanese speaker, Russian speaker, and another Russian speaker. So yeah.
Huh. Well, that's so, I mean, that's, I'm like, what race could we start? I mean, it's just like, it sounds like such a blast. And Questival is such a blast. Mm. Having participated in myself and like that you've now involved, if you've done over 100, these are like thousands and thousands of really Cotopaxi evangelists now, right? Mm-hmm. Because they've experienced exactly what Cotopaxi is all about. Mm-hmm. They've lived it. They've had so much fun. Mm-hmm. They've involved all of their senses in experiencing what you're all about.
Yeah.
And so how has that been transformative for you guys as a business versus just going about like a normal, having a normal marketing department? Mm-hmm. How has experience and why did you decide to make that kind of a hallmark of what it is that you're all about?
So we target millennial consumers. I really believe that when I looked at the outdoor space, a lot of these brands were built around the environment. And understandably, anyone that loves the outdoors is passionate about the environment. I know I am.
For sure.
I know you are. It's like, we want to protect the earth. And that's normal. But what I saw was there was an opportunity. This young consumer, I think they think a lot, like I did, around humanity. Hmm. And just thinking, we need to do more as a global community. To lift others.
Yeah.
And millennials are especially passionate about this issue. And I thought, you know, no one's done that. No one's built a brand around people, around humanity. And that's what I really wanted to do. And so, you know, we wanted to inject it into everything that we did. So when you order from our website, you'll get a handwritten thank you card with your order that's written by a refugee. And it's their very first job. You know, they're writing in their native language. They've been resettled here to Salt Lake City. They'll write in Arabic or in French or whatever their native language is. And if you're a customer, you get this thank you card. And it's meaningful. Yeah. And it kind of ties back to that story. You know, we have some great stories of the communities. I'm wearing some socks right now that are made out of Bolivian llama wool. It's one of these places I used to live. They live in, there's a little community of like 200 people. These tiny little communities, they make like $200 a year. And they live in extreme poverty. And their children oftentimes are going and working in mines, anything they can to go make supplemental income for their families. And I love this place. I love Bolivia. I go back pretty frequently, and I wanted to find a way to help these communities. And so we developed this supply chain where we buy llama wool from them. They make these amazing, beautiful sweaters that we have. And we get these llama yarns, and we make these amazing socks out of llama wool. So there's like these really rich impact stories tied to the product even.
Yeah.
So, but there needed to be stories and experiences that connected the brand to people more than just selling amazing gear. In our earliest days, I was in Brazil, I had the idea, I put together a small team of people that I felt I needed to go build the brand.
Yeah.
And we actually went down, we flew to Utah. I came here from Brazil, everyone else kind of flew into Utah. As we sat down, I kind of just laid out my vision for what I wanted this brand to stand for. And I remember talking about how I didn't want to be another outdoor brand that like sponsors some athlete to jump out of a helicopter and have an avalanche chase after them as they ski down a mountain. That to me just was not inspiring. It wasn't aspirational for me. It actually was out of reach for me. That wasn't something I would ever do. And I said, you know, I'd rather, if we're going to sponsor anyone, I'd rather go sponsor a couple of kids that take a year out of work or school and they go travel the world connecting with communities and giving back and serving others. And like, that's who we are. That's what we stand for. And so we've tried to build a brand around that.
So in that whole process, I mean, it's super inspiring, but I would imagine that there was also maybe some pushback from either investors or friends or like, oh, that's too pie in the sky. That's too, like, what did that pushback look like? And
So, I mean, a lot of...
Or was there pushback?
Oh, there was pushback. I mean, a lot of investors just said...
What's the ROI on doing good, right?
Yeah, exactly. You're giving away money before you make money. That doesn't make sense to us. Like, there were a lot of investors that were just like, look, I'm not interested in funding a benefit corporation.
Mm.
You guys are going to be giving away money for years before you make anything. And that's been true. We've given away every profit we've ever made and more. Wow. But I believe that long term, this business is, we're building a viable brand and business that will be able to sustainably do good and create returns for investors. And it's also a very saturated space, a very, very competitive industry, you know, thousands of outdoor brands. And, you know, how do you stand out? But, you know, this mission, because it's so core to who we are as a company, as a culture, as a brand, that people feel the authenticity behind what we're building, and that matters.
Well, and it's like because of that, like, level of authenticity and that connection with people in meaningful ways, if I understand right, you guys have the highest level of social engagement out of any of the other legacy brands that are there. Some of the other big name competitors that have been around for decades and decades.
Yeah, this was something actually an investor pointed out to us that was trying to invest in one of our rounds and just said, hey, we did an analysis of your entire industry. He's like, I don't know if you guys know, but your engagement is higher than any brand, period. And it was like, that was kind of news to us. We knew our engagement was high, but I was like, we hadn't actually done a study like that. You know?
You're like, so, well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for doing
that. So that's pretty awesome, pretty flattering. And it's always nice when you get those little things, because as a startup, I mean, we're small.
Right.
We're a small business, and it's hard sometimes.
Oh,
you know? And so
yeah.
when you hear these things, it's like, okay, we're doing something right. It kind of gives you some validation.
Yeah. So what is the core of all of this for you? Like, what is, I mean, obviously, like, I shouldn't say obviously, but like, be successful at business, make a difference in the world. But why is that something that's so important to you? You alluded to it a little bit earlier, like, you know, here you are in your high-rise apartment feeling very blessed. What's at the heart of that for you? Like, what gets you up every day and so energized and excited about making Cotopaxi be successful?
Yeah, it really boils down to, I believe that all humans, all people have equal value, that not one of us is more valuable than some other. Anyone that's spent time traveling and seeing other people, you can't help but just have that touch you. And a few years ago, I love working with refugees. And I went to the Middle East a few times, but I went to a refugee camp in Jordan and was able to interact with the people there, these amazingly brilliant, innovative, driven people that wanted to start new lives. And I, at the end of the day, was surrounded by these little children. And you know, as I looked in their eyes, I couldn't help but look at them and see the eyes of my own children and just think they're so similar. They have dreams and ambitions and they love their parents. And instinctively, one of these little boys grabbed my hands and walked up my legs and then my body and did a little backflip and took off his shoes when he did it, which I just thought was so polite
kind.
And then all the little kids lined up and did this. And it was just a really special moment, a beautiful moment where these children were able to forget that they were in a refugee camp. The average child, average person lives in a refugee camp for 18 years. So, and then I went back to my hotel room in Amman that night and on TV saw some news of a bombing in Aleppo right across the border and where a little child was pulled out of this rubble, just bleeding from his head and put in the back of an ambulance. And it just broke me inside. This is what drives me. It's this idea that we can make a difference. And I can't change the world on my own. I can't change it with this business, but I can make an impact in a few lives. And that's, I think if everyone in the world could see that and could have that hope, you know, I believe we could eradicate extreme poverty in our lifetimes. And that's my hope, is that we can do that. And I hope that Cotopaxi can inspire others to try to find out ways to do that through their businesses or individually. So that's my hope.
And what does that look like for businesses that are looking to follow the example of Cotopaxi to embrace this restoring we live in a world where business transaction is the norm, you know? It's just transactional. And yet you're looking to restore this level of humanity, not just at the core of, like, as a driving source of motivation for you and for everyone at your company, but like actually instilling those principles of respecting and helping lift others and honoring the humanity in everyone. And how do businesses embrace that? What does that look like?
Yeah. So I'd say, first of all, I hope that others will look at what we're doing and do better. Like, learn from what we're doing and try to do better. That's what we tried to do as we looked at other great brands that had social missions. Tom Shoes, Warby Parker.
Right.
These are the founders of our friends. They're actually investors in Cotopaxi. And we tried to learn lessons from what they did. And we tried to do something even a little deeper and tried to do more storytelling and try to really ingrain it more into who we were as a brand and culture. And I hope that the next generation of entrepreneurs will look at us and say, they did a good job, but like, I think we can do even better.
Hmm.
But I think that starts by, you have to embed this into everything that you do. You have to think about this in every possible way, every aspect of the business. You need to think about, how can I tie in this mission into what we're doing? And I think if you can do that, that's where things really start that's where you start to have meaningful change.
Yeah. And so, I mean, you're talking like embedded into how you think about operations, sourcing, marketing, HR, finance, mm-hmm. like in every aspect of your business, like fully embracing whatever your mission is and looking to make an impact. What do you say to business leaders that are maybe skeptical? Like, okay, like that's really nice and congratulations, you know, good job. Because we've all had these conversations before of the skeptical leaders, like, that's great. We just need to make a return on investment. And how do you respond to that?
Yeah, so I mean, a lot of times people will ask the question about you having to make trade-offs and tough decisions. And it's true, you do have to make tough decisions when you have this model. But the truth is, I think it's a false dichotomy, this idea that you have to either do good or do well as a business.
Mm.
I've seen that's completely false.
They can coexist.
They coexist and actually they complement each other.
Yeah.
The more that we're able to authentically give back and do good, the more people love the brand, the more people feel like that represents the values that I have. And so I want to wear that product because it says
resonates
to everyone, this is what I stand for.
Right.
And then it creates more profits in the business, which allow us to go do more good. And so like these two things, if you do them right, you shouldn't have to be making trade-offs saying, well, we could be more profitable, but we're going to go do good instead. It's like, no, we're going to go do good first. And we know that that's going to pay back in the end.
Yeah.
And we're going to have a business that's more viable that allows us to keep doing more good.
Yeah, well, and it seems also to be like, it's a long tail. It's also like a legacy mentality of we're building something that is not just a flash in the pan, let's make a quick buck, but let's make a lasting difference in people's lives.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, wow, that's awesome. The interesting thing too is that I think a lot of people,
The
chorizo's
good. Yeah.
The chorizo's good. But this conversation's really great. It's just so inspiring. I just imagine a world where we have business leaders that care about increasing levels of humanity and empathy and compassion and connection, adding value to people's lives. Imagine if every one of the businesses that we interact with on a daily basis cared that much more. Mm-hmm. The levels of happiness and empowerment and self-worth would increase globally,
You know, interestingly, we're seeing this shift over the last 200 years. In 1820, 94% of the world lived in extreme poverty. That's under $1.90 a day in today's dollars.
Yeah.
When I was born, 1978, I think you're about my age, maybe a couple years older, I can't remember.
Más o menos.
Más o menos. 1978, 40 years ago, only 40% of the world lived in extreme poverty.
Mm.
When I graduated from high school, it was 20%. Mm. Last year, it was 9.5%. So we are eradicating extreme poverty. Like, we are making a huge dent.
Impact, yeah.
But we can't just rely on government and on nonprofits alone. It's the private sector that's going to be able to help.
I agree.
It's capitalism, the opening of markets that's really lifted these people out of poverty, but capitalism isn't perfect.
Of course, yeah.
It's got some real downfalls and we need to fix those. And we are, like, in the era of our grandparents, I mean, children worked in factories.
Right.
And, you know, worked 7 days a week. And that's changed. And so we've gotten better, but we need to do a lot more. We need to do better in thinking about protecting our environment and, you know, doing things that in the right way that build up communities instead of exploit them. And so,
progress. And it seems like, too, we're also seeing a shift where it's like Seth Godin, another bald guy, has mentioned that we're now in a relationship economy. Like, this is different than we're in this transition period from the information age into this like relationship economy age where it's the brands and the companies that are going to continue to win and succeed are those that are making meaningful connections with all of their stakeholders, with they're like taking a meaningful look at all of those touch points and being deliberate about, like, let's create a great experience and not just if you build it, they will come, you know? Mm-hmm. If you create a great product, you're gonna be successful. No, we're now moving into, I think the millennials are impacting this tremendously. It's like, they want meaning. They wanna feel like a brand cares about them, mm-hmm. that the brand is making a difference in the world. Like, this company is not harming, you know, whatever thing that they're concerned about, whether it's in the environment to rights issues, to having like positive business practices that are making a positive impact in the world. Yeah. Are you seeing the impact of that? I mean, you're essentially being, you know, like the poster child for this movement of a relationship that you're building with all of your customers. I mean, are you seeing that shift and the impact of that in,
oh, yeah.
what does that look like yeah. for you guys?
And I think, and I mean,
how are you riding that wave?
I mean, I think you talked a little bit about high levels of engagement, and I think what really connects with people is the idea of like understanding there's a human connection between the products you're wearing and mm-hmm. The person that made it.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So a lot of times we look at the shirts we're wearing or the pants we're wearing, and we think, oh, a machine just kind of spit this out.
Right.
That's just not true. Like a human being
right.
sat down and made that shirt for you and made this for me.
Yeah.
And we wanted to try to create a connection with people so that when they wore their Bolivian llama sweater.
They're like, I saw the video of the llamas that this came, you know what exactly, I mean? Whatever
exactly.
it is. And the faces of the people that own it. Yeah.
Exactly. And
yeah.
Or when you're wearing one of our Del Dia backpacks, the ones that are like, they're
yeah,
one of a kind.
From the Philippines,
super colorful.
Right?
Yeah, from
yeah.
the Philippines. It's like, we gave the sewers creative power, a voice to yeah. go design
Expressive.
Their own bags.
Yeah.
We didn't tell them how to make them. We said, yeah. make no bag alike. That's the only rule. And so they're choosing the colors and the materials.
So awesome.
And they, for the first time in 11 and a half years on average, they've worked at this factory.
Yeah.
They've had choice in designing
yeah.
the bags. And so
awesome.
That's a special piece of this. You know, I'd love to hear, you know, when we started eating tacos a few years ago, this is something you're passionate about. And,
no.
But it went beyond just eating tacos. And I remember saying, you should write a book. And you're like, actually,
that's in the works.
Yeah. So I want to hear, like, what lessons have you learned in the search for the perfect taco?
Oh,
you know, tied
man.
Back to,
yeah.
To, like, the discussions that we're oftentimes having. I mean,
oh, yeah.
these are, like, rich, meaningful
oh, yeah.
discussions, and but it kind of ties back to food in some
totally
way.
Well, and over the years and thousands of tacos later, I think what I've found over the years in all of my taco journey is that there are so many simple things that they do in, like, you've been to Mexico City, you've been to, like, the Yucatan, you live there for five weeks and all over. I mean, when you go to like a true taqueria experience, there are so many little things that they do that make you wildly loyal, that you're just coming back for more. You love that place. That's your taco place. You want to keep going
yeah.
back. Like, that's why El Fogón, mm-hmm. it's like, yeah, the tacos are great, but it's also the whole experience that you have when you're there and how they take care of you. They make you feel like a VIP. They know your name, you know? It's just, they want, and it's the Mexican way to be like, ¿te gustó la comida? It's like, did you like it? Because I want to know if you liked mm-hmm. it. If you didn't like it, then I feel really bad and I want to make something that you like.
Mm-hmm.
And that level of mentality is powerful, you mm-hmm. know? They remember what you ordered. They're like, they want it actually, you know, they'll ask you when you get your tacos, do you want everything on it? Do you want onion, cilantro? Do you want, like, how do you want it? Do you want it extra crispy? Do you want cheese on it? How do you want it? They have this love of customizing and personalizing everything that they do. And I realized over these thousands of tacos that those are some simple but really approachable principles that everyone can learn from. Imagine if a business implemented principles like that, like you have done. You know, it's like this personalized touch of, here's the refugee that we're employing that you're like, oh my gosh, that's so great. And here's the story of the Bolivian farmer in a village of 200 people that's that we're now, you know, when I buy this sweater, I'm supporting and enabling them to now, he can now send his kids to school.
Mm-hmm.
They can now lift themselves out of it. I mean, all of this storytelling that we do that connects people in a meaningful way. So I found through the taco experience that it is all about this human connection. you know, the taquero's like shaving it right there in front of you, flipping the pineapple, catching it. It's this show. You're engaged. You're eating these tacos with other people. And it's a highly personal experience.
Really cool about Mexican culture, the way they connect with each other.
Oh, yeah. People,
you were telling me before about an experience you had where they like broke the glasses.
Oh yeah, back. So, at El Fogón.
Yeah, I mean, it's just such a great.
It was so awesome. Yeah, they at Santos. We went to El Fogón. We were in Playa del Carmen for a New Year's weekend, and we went there and 4 times in 3 days. We loved it. And every time we were there, we asked for Santos, who was our server the first day, and we just had such a riot with him. Like, he treated us like we were, you know, royalty, and just took super good care of us, as did the entire team. So by the time that we knew it was going to be our last meal in El Fogón, we took our picture with him. We're just like having the greatest time, and while we were taking the picture, this huge crash in the kitchen. Like, I don't even know, 20 glasses this size, like, fell on the ground, shattered. So, huge racket. And all of a sudden, there was, like, this split-second moment of silence, and then the place just, like, erupted. All of the team and the staff, they were, like, yelling, screaming. They were, like, laughing. They're, like, cheering on this guy that just broke all of the glasses. And so that just made us laugh. So we were having this, like, really, we're like, this is so funny. I don't know why we're laughing at broken glasses, but it's really fun. And I'll never forget this moment when Patrick, who was with us, he, like, reached in his pocket. He was having such a good time, unprompted, like, just reached in his pocket, threw down 100 pesos and put it in their tip jar. Just because they created this amazing, we like felt so good, this euphoric taco experience. And I'll never forget that, because that's why this search for the perfect taco even started, was because in addition to, of course, like the tacos being, I think, the best food on planet Earth. And we can always, I mean, it's just like, you have so many great memories eating tacos together, but it's what I've learned. What I've learned about life and about business and about how to make an impact and about how to reach people in a meaningful way. And that it's so simple. It's the eye contact. It's the smile. It's the, how are you doing? You know, like, let me get you your taco. You know, like, she was talking to us about the duck and like this, and this is really great and you should try this and whatever. And just that connection with people in meaningful ways. And so it's powerful. I mean, so the hypothesis is, wait, you mean I'm going to learn something transformative from my business or life from a taco stand in East LA? And I'm like, absolutely.
You know, one thing I love about tacos too, on this point, is that there's no right way to make a taco.
Right.
Right? There's infinite variety. Right. Like, you've had thousands of tacos. You've never had a duck taco.
I know.
And it was like amazing.
Let alone with like crispy leeks on it.
Yeah. And it was just amazing. It was. Right? And so, that's the great thing about business and life, is like, there's a beautiful way to do something that no one's ever done.
Yeah.
And it's good.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be like everyone else. And you can go create something that's different and unique and
totally
that's new, even though it seems like, oh, everyone's done it already.
Yeah.
You know, but you can go do something in a unique way that'll impact people.
Yeah. And really, like, and that's the goal. That's the goal with this. It's a goal. It's your goal. I mean, I think that what's been really fascinating as we've had these conversations with people like David Royce and, you know, all these amazing leaders that are embracing the power of experience to help them thrive, is that it doesn't really matter what they're doing. Meaning, socks or pest control or granola bars or outdoor gear, whatever it is, it's like we're making a difference in people's lives. We're adding meaning and we're connecting and uplifting. And it's been phenomenal to see that it's just, this is your vehicle, you know, outdoor gear. And it's so amazing. And you've done such you've created this movement that you talked about.
You know, it's interesting what you just said. Reminds me, when I was in college, I took an entrepreneurship class, and there was this amazing entrepreneur that came and talked to us, and we were just eating it up. I mean, just so inspiring. And he'd bought 3 different books, and he said, you can all like choose a book that you want. And it was like, one of them was like, I think, Rich Dad Poor Dad. One was like The E-Myth, The Entrepreneur Myth. And
then
there was a third one, which I'm not remembering, but he was just so generous. And I remember someone asking him, like, So are you like really passionate about alarm? He had an alarm system business. And it was like, are you really passionate about alarm systems? And he was like, no, but I'm passionate about my business because it's mine and because I built it and because I built it from the ground up. Like it didn't exist before and I created it. And one of my favorite quotes is by a man named Dieter Rufdorf. He says, the desire to create is one of the deepest yearnings of the human soul. We all have this inside of us. We all have a desire to create something. It might be a business, it might be a taco, you know, it might be music or art, but we all inside of us have this desire to build and create. Yeah. And it's one of the most beautiful truths, I think, that exists on this world. And so I think when we can, it goes, you know, these sowers in the Philippines, it's like giving them the power to create. I mean, there's something really powerful about that.
Yeah. So. Wow. What's your legacy look like? What do you want it to be?
First, I'd say I hope that I'm a good husband and father, like that matters a lot to me. Those are the people that make my life richer, and so that matters a lot. And then, but I'd say more than that, I'm ambitious, right? I have big ambitions and dreams, and I feel like I've been so lucky and blessed that I hope that I can inspire other people. I think of that mentor of mine that I mentioned, Steve Gibson's his name, and he changed my life. He put me on a different path in life. My hope is that there are a few people out there that say, you know what, Davis Smith made me think a little bit differently and made me realize that like I could change the world in some small way through what I do. And so that's what I hope for.
You're doing it.
How about you?
For sure.
How about you?
I mean, mine is very similar. I want the world to be a better place where I hope that whatever I do inspires people to feel a little bit more loved, feel more seen, feel a sense of worth and divine worth, really, because that's what I've felt. I remember being so poignantly touched with my experience in Nepal. Actually, two experiences, but one in Nepal, where
there are no tacos in Nepal.
I ate some tacos in Nepal, but I still I still eat other food.
Yeah, of course. I don't know. I've only seen you eat tacos.
Is there other food? There is no other food. No, yeah, I do eat other food.
How did you survive?
I know, it was weird. I killed my own,
yak or something.
Exactly. No, but I remember this namaste mentality. Mm. It's very real. Like in Nepal, you feel it. That's how they greet each other. It's this divine in me recognizes the divine in you, and it's real and it's meaningful. And I feel that, I have felt that personally, and I just want everyone to feel that. From my time that's spent in Guatemala too, with the Kekchi people there, I've gone back every summer for the past 10 years, and they don't speak, many of them don't speak Spanish, some of them do, but most of them speak their native Kekchi. And they have a phrase that's like changed my life. It's just their phrase like, how are you? But the phrase is actually literally translated as, are you happy in your heart? Yeah, masala chol, masala chol. And you're like, sain chol. Yeah, which means, I'm happy in my heart. And that's been something that's changed my mentality, changed my paradigm of, am I happy in my heart? And how can I help other people feel happy in their heart and know who they are and their divine potential, you know? That's what I want to do for the rest of my life. And if tacos are the vehicle to teach that and show that to people,
well, it
and
certainly
help
makes your heart happy, that's for
it
sure.
Makes hearts happy, but it's more than just the really delicious taco for me.
Yeah.
That's a very important part of it, but that's not the whole story.
Well, you better eat that Al Pastor, man. It's the Al Pastor is fantastic. So, I'm interested in hearing what your favorite one was too.
Yeah, of these three?
Yeah, of these three.
That wasn't super hot for you. You didn't even like react at all.
No. I'm kind of a wimp too. So you know it really wasn't hot when I wasn't like tearing up and stuff.
It's juicy.
It's juicy.
Which is juicy for Al Pastor. Just
the
more
problem is that with the corn tortilla, it falls apart more easily, right?
It's good. You know what? I can't even believe this, but I think I'm going to say the duck.
You know what? That was my vote. The duck. I liked all of them, but I'd probably rate
for sure.
I'd say duck, and then for me, Al Pastor, and then the chorizo.
Yeah.
All very good.
Very good. I have another question for you, and then we probably need to go. For anyone that's watching or listening, what's one thing that you would suggest that a leader do to level up the effectiveness of their brand experience? What could they do within the next 24 hours? Like one simple thing that they could do, because I think for a lot of people it feels kind of untouchable, you know? Mm. Like maybe they see, they know that it's important or they want to embrace it, but it seems a little bit like unattainable or a little bit too much.
My experience, and this is by making mistakes along the way, my first two businesses, I did not do this. And I recognized I really missed a big opportunity to create really a more powerful brand. Mm. And that is, you know, if you're an entrepreneur, you're someone that's running a business, or if you're even like an area of influence in a business, maybe a senior leader, you need to sit down and identify your core values.
Mm, your individual personal core values.
Mm-hmm. And you know, ideally those line up with the brand values. You know, for me, the values of Cotopaxi are three core values that we use in this business. My three core values. And then you build, and it takes time to do this, but then you go build the culture and the traditions and the rituals of this business around those values. Mm. And when you do that, that's when you're going to have the biggest impact on your brand, because it's going to be authentic and it's going to be
it's part of who you are. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's something that you're so passionate about individually that it's going to be something you think about every day. And so it's going to change the way you think about your business, and it's going to change the way you work every day in the business. So that would be my advice, is to, if you haven't done that, you need to identify those core values. Might be three or five core values, not really more than that probably. And then think through really, like, how do you inject those values into everything you're doing? So that would be my advice.
Awesome. I love it.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Taco Incidents. I'd love to hear your feedback, so hit me up on Instagram, email, phone, or, of course, over tacos. Check out our website, searchfortheperfecttaco.com, where you can watch the video version of these episodes and see all the taco action. And just when you thought Taco Tuesday couldn't get any better, I'll be releasing a new episode every week. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast so you'll be the first to know. And I'd be forever grateful, and definitely owe you tacos, if you'd leave a review of Taco Incidents on Apple Podcasts. So join me as we search for the perfect taco together and discover how amazing brand experience can empower you to thrive.